Good morning. And stay in Matthew 24 and think about whether your life has turned out like you have expected it to. Of course, I hope this sermon goes like I expect it to. But pick a time in your life, in years past, and think to yourself, what was I thinking then about how my life would turn out? And could I have expected where I am today? Be the essence of our lesson today. Matthew 24 starts, but it really is in the beginning of at the end of a Tuesday. A few lessons ago, I preached from Matthew, and it was a Tuesday in the life of Jesus. This is still a long day for Jesus. Tuesday was Jesus' last, the Tuesday of Jesus' last week. Let me get that right. The Tuesday of Jesus' last week before he was crucified and resurrected was a day of victory for the Messiah, at least in the minds of his apostles. I'm a bit of a basketball fan, and so I'll use a basketball analogy, right? We've got the tournament going on. But Jesus and his apostles went into the home court, the home playing field of the Pharisees, which was Jerusalem, which was the temple. And if basketball is not your thing, imagine going into somebody's house that maybe doesn't really want you there. Jesus and his apostles go into the house of the Pharisees, and they argue and they debate and they go at each other, and Jesus cleanses the temple. He hits them in their pocketbooks. Then Jesus really nails them as hypocritical leaders, and he doesn't convince them that he's the Messiah, but he leaves them speechless. And so you're the apostles, and you're walking out, and Jesus, in the vernacular of the young people, they just owned the Pharisees, right? They just stuck it to them. And so they're walking out, and verse 2, verse 1, all the disciples came, and they're pointing to Jesus, all the buildings of the temple. And Luke adds, in Luke 21, that the 12 were admiring the noble stones and the noble offerings of the Jewish temple. So they're walking out of this place, and they're saying, man, this temple is amazing. The offerings that go on here to God are amazing. And Jesus, this Messiah, the Messiah that Matthew's trying to convince us that Jesus is, this Messiah is he's going to take this temple over, and we're going to kick all the Pharisees out, and the kingdom of the Messiah is going to start in this temple. And down the street there, that's going to be Peter's office, right? They're picking out their office space. And James and John are going to set up their shop in this part of the temple. And they're thinking to themselves, this is going to be great. Robert Burns wrote the book of Mice and Men, and if he were there, perhaps Robert Burns would say, the best laid schemes of mice and men often go astray. Has that been true of your life? The schemes that you've had for where you would end up in life haven't always turned out the way you thought they would? If Isaiah was there, perhaps Isaiah would interject this thought that he received from God. God says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. The 12 walk out and they think, yeah, we're going to start things from the temple. And Jesus looks at them and he says, the temple's not going to be here. Things are not going to work out the way that you thought they would. Has your life worked out the way that you expected? Have there been times where you envision a noble house or a noble profession, or this is the way things are going to work out? And Matthew 24, I was relieved to read this, but it's one of the most difficult passages within the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know, I've been sort of pounding my head against the wall. How do you make sense of Matthew 24? Because sometimes you read it and you think, oh, this is the destruction of Jerusalem. And then sometimes you read it and you think, well, this is the end of time. But if theologians for thousands of years have been struggling with it, then me at 29, I guess it's okay for me to wrestle with that, with what the meaning is. I brought in a couple Bibles just to give you a sense here. This was my Bible when I was in high school, not that long ago. This is my Bible when I was in college. So there's two. And then, of course, here's the one that I'm using now. And I can guarantee you the text in Matthew 24 across all those Bibles is the same. I haven't tampered with the text at all. But if you read the notes I have in my margin on Matthew 24, you'd think I have a split personality. You know, I thought one thing at one time, and one Bible doesn't really have a lot of notes because I didn't know what to think. And so I'm going to present to you, I'm going to suggest that all of Matthew 24 can talk about the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. But if you see some things differently than me, then let's have a cup of coffee someday and talk about that. I want to give you four pieces of the puzzle, if that makes sense. And then you can go and try and fill in the rest. And if the pieces don't fit, then we can talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of details today. I hope I don't get too bogged down in them. But the main thing that I want, if you take nothing else from the lesson today, whether you agree or disagree with what I do with Matthew 24, the 12 apostles were struggling to align their idea of the temple with God's plan for the church. And isn't that an ongoing task of ours, is taking what our idea of life should be and molding it to what God would have it to be? And isn't that hard sometimes? Put yourself in the place of the apostles as they try and do that. Some consider this apocalyptic literature. If you read Revelation or Ezekiel and you think, wow, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. It's a certain type of literature that we don't really have anymore, and we're going to talk about how to interpret some of that. But the basic purpose that gets lost in the details is that apocalyptic literature like we're going to read in Matthew 24, is written primarily to exhort you to endure. You may not know what the details are, but the message is press on and endure. Jesus is going to rock the world of Judaism. But just because he rocks the world doesn't mean that he's about to drop the world. In fact, maybe he's shaking things up just to get people's attention, to say, I am still in control. If you take nothing else, I'd like you to take that thought with you today. Let's get into the text. Matthew 24, verse 3. We'll start in verse 2. But Jesus answered them, you see all these things, don't you? These things? Top right up there, what is these things? I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. These things is talking about the stones of the temple being thrown down one from another. And so imagine Jesus telling you that. The place you thought was going to be the base of your operations, Jesus says, it's going to go down in smoke. What would your first question be? What would your first question be? Verse 3, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when? Wouldn't that be your question? Be good to know, because I don't want to be there when it happens. When will these things be? Once again, these things, the destruction of the temple. The first question is when. You like that little shadow right there? When will these things be? It's a time question. And then they say, what will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age? Now on the bottom here, we're going to talk about the coming of the Son of Man in the clouds and the close of the age, because that could mean a couple different things. But set that aside for right now. Remember the first question, when are these things going to happen? It's a time question. The second question, what is going to be the sign? What things are going to happen that will indicate this is right around the corner? the destruction of the temple. In fact, if you read Mark 13 and Luke 21, there's almost no doubt that the time and the sign of what's going to happen is all referring to the destruction of Jerusalem and not to the second coming in Christ, as you can kind of get that sense. So we're going to put these two top pieces together first as we study here. Basically, if you had a friend and they didn't know where you lived and they were going to come and visit you, you would say, "Hey, what time are you going to show up?" And they would say, "Oh, I'm going to show up about 7 o'clock. And they would say, "Well, what sign is there that I'm getting close to your house?" And you would say, "Oh, it's the pink house on the left," right? So they're asking Jesus, when is this going to happen? And what things are we going to see that we know that the destruction is close? 24, verse 4. Jesus answers them, "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginning, are but the beginning of birth pains." We've had a lot of babies born recently. Have you noticed that? We've got a lot of mothers well acquainted with birth pains. What is a birth pain? Jesus says there's going to be signs that happen, but they're more like birth pains. Birth pain is, and I don't speak from experience, but from reading, something big is coming, it's going to hurt, but it still remains a ways off. Something big is coming, whatever, you know, the contraction or the water breaking or whatever, something big is coming, it's probably going to hurt, but it's not a guarantee that that baby's going to be here in an hour. So Jesus says, what does he say? What things are going to be like birth pains? He says there's going to be people who pretend to be Christ. That's not the sign that things are right around the corner. There's going to be war and there's going to be famine and earthquake. There's going to be hatred. There's going to be false prophets. There's going to be people who fall away from the church. There's going to be the gospel being preached throughout the known world. That's not a sign that the temple is about to be destroyed. It's birth pains that you just got to endure. These things have to be lived through. Don't lose faith that Jesus' words are not faithful because of these things. Verse 9, we'll finish out the birth pains. "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. The gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world, the whole known world, as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come." When is the temple going to be destroyed, Jesus? Well, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to happen, and you got to get through it, but there's still some pain to get through, and it's still a long ways off. And then in verse 15, he comes to an unmistakable sign that the end is imminent. The end of the temple in Jerusalem is imminent. Verse 15, "So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains." Luke 21, verse 20, interprets abomination of desolation for us, and he says, when there's an army surrounding Jerusalem, and they look like they're going to destroy Jerusalem, that's what Daniel's talking about. That's when it's time to flee, if you know what's good for you. This abominable pagan army is going to surround Jerusalem. They're going to destroy Jerusalem, and that's going to be the unmistakable sign that that temple that you think is awesome, that in fact in the past was pretty cool, it's about to be destroyed. Go over in, skip down over to verse 32. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know the summer is near. So also, when you see all these things, you will know that he is near at the very gates. It's going to be an unmistakable sign. The army's going to be at the gate. Verse 24, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. These things, the destruction of the temple. When's it going to happen? He doesn't say exactly when it's going to happen. What's going to be the sign? Well, there'll be a lot of things that are like birth pains, but there's an unmistakable sign when the Roman army is here to destroy Jerusalem and the temple. When they surround the city, you know that it's at hand. Verse 27, it's like lightning. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Now set aside the coming of the Son of Man for right now, and let's focus on the lightning. It's unmistakable when there's a crack of lightning. It's unmistakable. The army surrounding Jerusalem, it's an unmistakable thing, a sign that you know you're there, that the army is there. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. So what do we do about the coming of the Son of Man and the close of the age? Remember Jesus' words in verse 3. What will be the sign of your coming? Not Jesus, this is the apostles asking. What will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age? What is he talking about there? This analogy might not work. Forgive me if it doesn't work. But if the apostles were a cup of tea, we have anyone who enjoys drinking tea? If the apostles were a cup of tea, what tea bag would they have been steeped in? And what I mean by that is you've got two choices for tea. You've got the Old Testament tea bag, and you've got the New Testament tea bag. What would the apostles have spent their time? What would they have tasted like? Their thoughts, what would their thoughts have been like? Would it have been bent more toward Old Testament, or would it have been bent more toward New Testament? What do you think? I think Old Testament, right? Because the New Testament hasn't been written yet. They've spent time with Jesus, but when they would hear a phrase, the Son of Man coming in the clouds, we think that it's the coming of Christ, and maybe perhaps it is. But there's an Old Testament sense of that word, and I think to them it would have tasted a lot more like the Old Testament sense than the New Testament sense. Let's go to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel 7, verse 13. This is a passage where God is reassuring Daniel that he's going to judge all of the enemies of Israel in due time. And the way he explains this judgment in chapter 7, verse 13, Daniel says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man. Did you catch that? On the clouds of heaven there came one like the Son of Man. Son of Man coming on the clouds. And he was presented, and he came to the Ancient of Days, that's God, and he was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom, that all peoples and nations and languages would serve him. And so there's this essence that the Son of Man coming in the clouds is not end of time language, so much as it's the end of a nation language. The Son of Man in authority and in power comes to judge nations. Let's look at another piece of evidence for that. Let's go over to Isaiah chapter 13. Isaiah 13, verse 10. Remember, we're trying to think like the apostles would have thought, to get the flavor of what their thinking was. Isaiah 13, verse 9. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of the heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light. The stars falling and the sun and the moon not shedding their light, this sounds like end of the world language, the coming of the day of the Lord. But notice who it's talking about. Verse 19, and Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the splendor and pomp of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. Now, Isaiah spoke in 750 BC, and he's talking about stars falling, and he's talking about the sun and the moon being darkened. And he's saying, that's not the end of the world. That's the end of the world as Babylon understood it. It was the undoing of their earthly kingdom and dominion. And so if you're one of the apostles, there's a strong possibility that when Jesus says, you will see me coming on the clouds, they would think, oh, so judgment is coming upon a nation rather than upon the end of the whole world. Matthew 24, verse 29. Now tell me if this doesn't sound an awful lot like Isaiah 13. Isaiah 24, 29. Matthew 24, verse 29. And tell me if this doesn't sound like Isaiah 13. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Now, I don't know about you, but it sounds like what Isaiah described was going to happen to the nation of Babylon is what Jesus is saying. That's going to happen to Judaism, and it's going to happen to the temple. It's going to be destroyed. That's a big deal, because the temple was their way of life. Was life going to work out like the apostles thought that it would work out? Can you imagine a time in your life, maybe before you were a Christian, and you were like, okay, I have plans for my life. And then Christ comes into your life, and you're like, man, the stars might as well fall on me, because it feels like my world is falling apart. The coming of Jesus very likely was the collapse either of Babylon in Old Testament days, but also Jerusalem. It doesn't have to mean the whole universe is coming undone. No one knows when this is going to happen. And when Jesus talks about the close of the age or the end of this generation, he's talking about his own generation. And so the destruction of the temple, all of these events need to fit in before the first century is over, because that's when most of Jesus' people had died off. Let's remember our main focus here as we wrap things up. When Jesus shakes their world, when Jesus shakes things up and he rattles their teeth, you know what? They have no choice but to recognize that he's the one in control. It doesn't mean that Jesus is about to drop the earth and, oh, he lost control. It's him saying, hey, I'm the one who decides how things go, not your idea of how things should go. So what have I tried to say today? God shaking the world doesn't mean that he's about to drop it. That's the main point I'd like you to think on. When the 12 ask, when will these things happen and what will the sign be? These things is the temple, and the old way of doing the Jewish religion was going to be destroyed. The only reliable sign that this is going to happen is the Roman army coming and being on the outside of the city, threatening to destroy it. The Son of Man coming on the clouds is judgment language of a nation's undoing. And the closing of the age and the passing of this generation is the passing of Jesus' generation. God judged Jerusalem in AD 70 for killing his son. And he sent Caesar Titus and the armies of Rome to complete this task. Here's an ancient painting of the destruction here. When the soldiers discovered that there was gold in the temple, Titus wasn't going to destroy the temple, but when the soldiers discovered there's gold in there, they said, man, let's tear that place apart and get every piece of gold that we can, because that's all that's left that's valuable in that temple. But God's point was that, you know, all that remains, all that must remain, is that the noblest offering, the blood of Jesus, is the only offering that remains or that needs to remain for us. So the temple and the Old Testament way of doing things was done away with so that Jesus would have preeminence and that his sacrifice would have preeminence. Let me give you a challenge. Go home and see if some of these things make sense to you or not. But I'd like to challenge you in your life. Consider a time when life really rattled your teeth, when it kind of grabbed a hold of you and shook you around and you said, well, this wasn't what I expected was going to happen. What made that experience so hard? What beliefs, perhaps, did you have that were kind of like the temple, that maybe they had an important place, but they just didn't fit in with God's plan anymore? You ever have those kind of ideas that you just hold on to? I can't give that up, and God's trying to get you to let go of them, and it's hard because you're not letting go of old ways of thinking. But certainly, there were also some birth pains. There were some things in your life that you just had to endure, some pain that you had to go through that was unavoidable in order to get something valuable. You know, Jesus never promises us that we're not going to experience birth pain type things. And sometimes you put your head down and you endure and you get through it and you remain faithful. You know where you're going to be three Bibles from now? When the world loses interest in you, God will always have your best interest in mind. When life throws your choices into chaos, we choose to live the Christ-like life. And I pray that whatever you're going through, that you would endure until the end of your life or until Jesus comes to take us home. God bless you as you endure. God bless you as you continue to study in His Word. If there's something the church can do to help you and encourage you on your walk, please come forward. Let's stand and sing together.